an answer. We'll clean all of that up before it goes on air.
Okay.
The next idea gives us a platform to explore ways of moving Michigan forward. Our latest contributor believes one way to do that would be rethinking the way we approach treating depression. Dr. John Graydon is a University of Michigan psychiatrist. He's the founder and executive director of the University of Michigan Depression Center. He's the founding chair of the National Network of Depression Centers and a research professor in the Molecular and Behavioral Neuroscience Institute. Dr. John Graydon, so good to have you with us on The Next Idea.
It's so wonderful to be here. Thank you.
Give us a sense. What are some of the ways that depression costs our state and our society money?
Number one, it's costly to treat it. Number two, it's costly when people lose their ability to go to work, or if they are at work, they're not working effectively. Number three, it leads to hospitalizations. They're expensive. Four, and on a more tragic level, it is about 70 to 80% of the time the cause for death by suicide. So if you start saying dollars and cents cost, if you start saying the tragedies to families and then essentially even mortality, it's, according to the World Health Organization, it's the fourth most disabling entity of all of the illnesses they track for men and first for women, the most disabling disorder in the world for women.
That is eye-opening. What are some of the issues that you find stand in the way of getting funding for research on treatments for depression?
Ignorance, not knowing enough about it. Stigma, being embarrassed to talk about it. That, by the way, is more relevant for older people. We've made great progress among youth, college campuses, things like this. Availability and access of expert places and probably most notably, in my judgment, and the thing we really desperately need to take on, the absence of data as to how we provide personalized, precise treatments.
Not one size fits all.
Oh, you got it.
That's it. That's so, the key, isn't it?
You have it.
Because I could come in with one set of issues and problems. You could come in with something totally different. So let's not try to do an easy one-size-fits-all approach to treating.
And if we throw the brain into this, I have material for lectures. Mm-hmm. I can identify probably about 40 potential contributors to the features that get diagnosed as depression. The most common ones are the ones that people talk about with stress and changing neurotransmitters or chemical messengers in the brain. And they're real. They really do produce problems. But what about head trauma? What about the issues that come from substance abuse? What about the inflammatory processes that sometimes occur now for people who have heart disease and other inflammatory things? There are multiple things. Sleep apnea, I could go on and on. Mm. But there is no other phrase that is better than the one you've used. One size will never fit all.
What's different about what the University of Michigan Depression Center has been doing in terms of the treatment approach for depressions and bipolar illnesses?
We were the first of the centers ever to be founded. Our regents were very open-minded and said, let's do what we've done for cancer and heart disease, to take on the idea that this isn't an area of a focal expertise. We need basic scientists. We need individuals in the areas when these things start, pediatricians, college mental health people, the individuals that are working in nursing and in other things. So we are interdisciplinary. And the whole idea is how, I've already used the phrase, but how can we possibly get to the point where we can say, if one size doesn't fit all because we've got multiple causes, mm-hmm. we can come up with the tests and the trials to show this is what will work for you.
And in essence, isn't that what happens with modern cancer treatments?
Oh, and that's the roadmap. That's what I felt we should be following. Cancer now no longer, some cancer specialists no longer even use terms, oh, you've got lung cancer. Mm-hmm. They'll break it down into the four types that they've characterized because each of them requires a different approach to treatment. The same thing with breast cancer. They're making progress that just makes me envious, but rather than sit and sulk, we're just copying their approach.
How is big data changing the way we treat depression?
Not fast enough because the research funds aren't there, but it is changing the way simply because in order to understand these things, we're going to have very large samples to look at things like genetic things. And then we're going to have to say, hey, 10,000 people, this is what we're finding in this category of people who respond to this approach. All of those things are happening, but a little too slowly yet because the research support for this area is not as strong as it is for some of the others. But it's not, I wish it were, but it's not going to happen where we come up with an answer for, oh, this is how you best treat this kind based on a sample of 1 or 10 or even 100. We need big data, and that takes money.
It takes money. And so what do you think it's going to take to get that money and to I guess, make depression and bipolar disorders as I don't want to say the word attractive, but as compelling for funding as cancer?
Well, probably voices. Mm. I'm glad I'm here. And I think data in their own way. I think sometimes tragedies bring it to the surface. We watch an increment of interest and a willingness to try to take on some things every now and then when, for example, veteran suicide became an issue. All of a sudden, people said we should do something about this. But it doesn't have the staying power yet, and that's why we need to stay at it. And thank you for helping by just even calling attention to this topic today. Ultimately, what it also takes is the voices of those who have struggled and who get better and go out and say, look at me. It's a sign of strength, and it takes courage to do this. But man, am I so glad I did it! You know. So
you say in your essay that we're nearing a turning point in how depression is researched and how it's treated. What do you mean by that, and how do you see this changing the way we do things now?
Cynthia, if we can put together the information that comes from a collection of things, and we're nearing an area now when we can do this in dramatic fashion. So a few years from now, walking into the doctor's office, you're going to do it with a strand of your own hair, with a little swab from inside your cheek, maybe a finger stick. Mm-hmm. And taking these things, we can measure hair cortisol. Because the other way around, cortisol from your hair sample to show when you were stressed. This is what's being done, for example, to follow interns as they enter medicine. And it's a stressful time, and we can show differences. We can look at genetic substrates. We can understand what might be the clues, like cancer, to say this is the subtype that you have. And ultimately, we can probably find our ways to saying the profile that you have is not going to make it possible for you to be treated with this medicine, for the simple reason that you can't tolerate that one. Or you may need more of it in order to be effective. So the potential promise is just overwhelming.
And I'm just thinking of it from the patient's point of view, that if treatment A is tried and it doesn't work, the first thought would be, it's my fault. Mm-hmm. So the idea that I blew this too. This didn't work for me. I meant to be this way. When you're in that mindset, so the idea that something could be targeted and come in and make a real difference could only lift them up more.
What you said is kind of a hallmark of those who struggle with depression and even the depressions that come along with bipolar, which is a negative view of self, world, future. There's a blame, and it's not their fault. We don't have yet the sophistication from these tools, but we're getting there. So we can break through that one too.
In your mind, what does the future look like if we continue to cut funds for depression research and treatment? What's at stake?
Families, lives, dollars, productivity, continued impact on other healthcare as well. Nobody kind of knows this part, and I'll try to do it briefly. If one has heart disease, the odds of also developing depression are double. And the odds of dying in the next year are probably 2 to 3 times greater. So now you start getting into, it's not just a mental health problem, a psychiatry problem. It's a total health problem. I mentioned heart, same with cancer, same with diabetes. We need to tackle these illnesses so that our overall health care can improve And so that, in essence, we cut our costs, save lives, keep families back together, and all I could go on.
Yes. Yeah, and it's a very, very compelling essay that you'll find at the Next Idea page at michiganradio.org. I urge you to read Dr. Graydon's essay, and as always, we welcome your comments. Dr. John Graydon is the founder and executive director of the University of Michigan Depression Center. Lifelong work trying to tackle this thing that exists in so many homes in our state. Thank you so much for being with us, Dr. Graydon.
Thank you. We are going to win this fight.
Amen. Wonderful. Oh, we could talk all day.
Well,
you did great.
It's not fun.